AI, it is the buzzword, and it is transforming everything from marketing to copy editing. But it doesn't stop there, because AI is also at the core of Enote, a music technology startup that uses AI to bring the world's sheet music into a fully digital format. It's been called a game changer for musicians because it will make sheet music more affordable, more convenient, and more interactive than ever before. And that's what's so exciting about it, a game changer. And here to tell us about how this app is going to do exactly that and democratize access to the great masters and much, much more. I'm thinking here maybe Metallica, who knows? I'm chatting today with musician, geek, and entrepreneur Boyan Vidnoff. He is co-founder and CEO of Enote, and he's here in Berlin with an amazing background, Boyan. You really do walk the talk. Beautiful piano. Welcome to The Groove.
Thank you, Peggy. Very nice to meet you and to be on the show.
As I said, it is all about that intersection of music, technology. I mean, let's start with you, right? You are, and you've called yourself, a relatively digital guy. At the same time, and we see it, you are the conductor and artistic director of the Mannheim Philharmonic Orchestra, an orchestra that you founded, rather, at the age of 23. So how do the two passions, music and tech, come together in your company?
Well, yes, I consider myself a digital guy. When I was a kid, I always had big interest for computers. Maybe it started with the passion that my father had for computers. So this for sure passed over to me. And I also, as many kids in my age back then, we were building our own computers from parts and things like that. So I always grew up with that passion for tech and always looking at what could the future look like and be excited about it. At the same time, I grew up in a musical family, and music was always a very important part of my life. And I knew quite early on that I want to go in this profession and be a conductor. And so when I founded the Mannheim Philharmonic, this is how my entrepreneurial journey started, because I actually wanted to found an orchestra to conduct, but I did not realize at the age of 23, when I was doing it, that there comes a big part of entrepreneurial duties too, which over the course of the years, of course, I got acquainted with and learned how to deal with it. And I think this is what later helped me, of course, when we founded Enote. And with Enote, it's a passion that comes together, basically making the world for musicians more exciting in a way, and looking into the future. I always been someone who likes to be part of shaping the future rather than sitting and waiting for others to do it. So this is how the two passions come together. And the experience of founding the orchestra and leading it, this entrepreneurial experience, certainly comes handy too.
You mentioned also about your family, computer, music. I mean, it makes me think a lot of Bach, right? It's mathematics and it's music. So it is a good fit. It is definitely a good fit.
Oh, totally. Actually, in my family, we had either physicists or musicians or engineers. So it was always quite mathematical or musical. And if you look in the back in the past, you will always see that those two kind of always went well together. Either you had professional musicians who had big interest in natural sciences, or the opposite way.
Absolutely. Physics, philosophy, poetry, all coming together. Just wonder how your family reacts to knowing their son is, he's a gadget guy. He's also a very musical and very forward-thinking guy as well.
Well, for sure, I gave them lots of headaches with my entrepreneurial journeys. I remember when I started the orchestra, for sure, they were scared. it was also to be scared. I just hired a whole for 8 concerts and I just went with it. And I just told my parents, will you save me in case something happens? They said, depends on how big the total sum will be that you have to be saved. It went well for 13 years. Of course, they were very happy and excited, especially my mother, who is actually a heavy user of the app, and she really enjoys it. And my father was, while he was still alive, very, very excited about it. And he, as I was saying, was the guy also who bought always the very first computers when they came out. We had always we were always the first on anything. We had, the first DVD burner, the first CD burner. I remember back then, thousands. He basically paid a fortune for that. He was always very excited about tech. And I guess I got that from him.
I just love that story, to tell you the truth. So we see that so much of the app is autobiographical. Let's talk about the app, right? Because you are digitizing sheet music, which it in itself is not a totally new idea. There are others. How are you pushing the envelope? What's different here?
Well, I would say what is different is that we really take a holistic approach to a digital future in sheet music. So what we're doing is we take everything that has been ever written, we digitize it, we bring it into one app where musicians have access to it, like you would have with Spotify for audio. So you have one central library where you have access to all the music. We're talking to all the major music publishers to get really everything. We're in contact with all the major libraries. So to have also letters and historical documents, to really have one place, one go-to place when it comes to sheet music. And then we're applying artificial intelligence over those scans that we're doing so that the computer not only displays a static piece of music, but actually it understands what is on the music. So it understands the symbols and therefore can offer you a much more interactive experience when you are working with sheet music. This starts by, for example, recognizing automatically repetitions so that you can just tap a button and jump to the place where it should be jumped to without having to find the page and turning. But it goes further to recognizing where you are, turning automatically the page, correcting hobby musicians when they're practicing and telling them where they make mistakes and supporting them to practice, up to one day fully automizing theaters and stage productions and all of these things.
I was reading about that, and one of the cool things that stood out for me was how you're going to discover music, but also build arrangements, music that we don't know what the arrangement was. And that's very common. I was just listening to something recently. So I was looking at, it's actually the 50th anniversary of Days of Future Past from the Moody Blues. And they were also in an interview saying, we'd love to do some things about this, but we don't know the arrangement anymore for much of the music on the album. So you see, there's a lot lost. There's a lot to be gained.
Absolutely. Just think about also all the artists that nowadays, I'm talking about artists now in pop and other genres where CDs come out, and there are no arrangements at the moment when the album is released for people to just play that, right? So you need musicians to sit down, maybe write an arrangement, then maybe it's too hard to play for some beginners, maybe too easy for others who are more advanced. And until you create that material, it just takes time. It's not scalable. And that's a huge field where we can create material, especially for hobby musicians who want to be able to play what they love. Imagine you could say, I want that song in that style for my skill level. And with two clicks, you have something that you can play. That's something that AI can help us and create a lot of material for people to enjoy what they love more.
So one thing here is about equipping musicians to do what they do better. So it's not AI replacing us, it's enhancing us. And that's not a small point, because you were giving me the data yourself. I had no idea. 200 million professional and hobby musicians worldwide is the count right now.
There are others who say maybe it's even up to 400 million people doing that, playing regularly an instrument on a weekly basis. And there are just a lot of people who love being able to reproduce the tunes that they love listening to, and giving them material and putting tools at their disposal to be better at doing so is something that technology can be very strong at. When kids nowadays have lessons, instrumental lessons, it's usually 45 minutes to 1 hour per week. and then they're left alone to practice. Usually these practicing hours are not very productive during the week, because the kids don't really know how to practice. They need guidance, but the teacher cannot be there all the time. So we've seen that already in beginners apps that are helping people to discover an instrument in a digital way by showing which on the piano which key to press and basically teaching you the first steps. It picks a lot of interest in people, so it's a natural thing to evolve that and give people also the possibility to do that with a bit more advanced material rather than just scales and single melody lines.
And also when you talk about discovery, I'm thinking about how you can also make music searchable, discoverable. I mean, this is the music that is the sheet music, but you know, there's a lot there that we have yet to really understand, uncover, bring alive even for the first time.
Oh yes, of course. I mean, when you scan everything and bring everything into one place, of course, you need to work on the metadata. That means you need to clean up a lot of metadata. And by doing this project, we realized that although there are so many great libraries around the world, everyone has their own, let's say, logic in archiving everything. So it's, you know, in one place, it's stored in one way, in another library, in another. And therefore, when you search for something, it's always very difficult to find what you're looking for. And what we're doing, and I would really say this is the largest digitization project in history, in music, definitely. What we're doing is we're bringing everything in one standardized, also metadata format, so that you can say, for example, I search for a piece for violin and piano from, you know, a French composer who will have anniversary in 2030, and it should not be longer than 10 minutes. And then it just spits you out all the results that fit this request. Nowadays, as a musician, you'd need to call friends and ask, do you know something that could fit that? So it will help musicians for sure in programming, but it will help musicologists in researching and finding new pieces, maybe discovering works that have never been performed before. And if you think in a big data aspect, I mean, being able to read the music means also that you can input a motif and see where this motif, musical motif, basically it can be a small melody or it can be few notes, where those appeared in all of music history throughout the span of 200 years, and basically see which composers use that, maybe which pop artists. I mean, we know, for example, Queen, Freddie Mercury loved opera, so we all know that there is a lot of things taken from opera. So it's very interesting also for music scientists, music researchers to figure out maybe things, links that they did not know about.
When you talk about the music and what we can see there, it's also about sort of building that tree. You know, you always see this. I do this because I'm pretty deeply into rock. You're obviously into classical, but there's also, well, so-and-so influenced so-and-so, and you get an understanding and you see it more holistically and you can actually appreciate it more. And there's more innovation there. There's a lot of possibilities maybe to mix and mash up in classical music as well as in other genres.
Well, music education in general, it always starts also with a classical education in a way, because when you learn an instrument, you go through, especially in piano, you go through the exercises that are required for your fingers to work well. And so you end up, of course, always also practicing classical pieces. And in fact, some of the greatest pop and rock artists are actually huge music lovers from the also classical music lovers. One influences, of course, the other. Great jazz musicians have been also great classical performers. And actually many great classical artists love to play jazz. So this is something that always has, one thing has been always been an influence for the other genre. And having one central library for everything just is a natural evolution, moving from paper, having it finally all digital and being able to do much more with it.
Let's talk about how you get discovered, how the app gets discovered. Talked about uncovering exciting new music, maybe even bringing some music to life for the first time. But you have an approach that also makes the app very, very relevant. Tell me about it and also why you chose it.
Generally in music, everything starts with a teacher. When you for the first time express the wish to learn an instrument, even nowadays where there are great apps where you can maybe, as I was saying, download them and have a first impression of what it is to play piano. So you play a bit with the app and you see, oh, that's nice. It's something that could resonate with me. I would like to do that more. You will need at some point someone who instructs you how to do it, because just technically you will not be able to progress past a certain level in order to play more difficult material, and therefore you will need a guidance. And the moment that there is a teacher in the game, he or she will of course give you their recommendations for what they think is right to do, and they have been in their education through a lot of pain and difficult process to learn. So they will, of course, recommend what they think is the best approach. And therefore, you will listen to them. So if you want nowadays to introduce a new standard for sheet music, you must go through the professional community. You need to build a product that will convince the professionals that this is the way to go, that this is something that is good for them. So this is why we chose to build an app against the odds of, I remember all investment community in the beginning that was saying, well, you need to build for the masses. And we were telling him, yes, absolutely. The market is the masses for sure. But if you don't convince the decision makers of the masses, which are the teachers, the product will never find its way to the masses. And this is exactly what's happening. We're advertising actually the app only to professional musicians, but we have over 60% hobby musicians on the platform as users. And this shows that this approach was the right one and is the right one to build something with the ambition it's to be the right solution for the highest professional, for the highest ambition, because they will automatically then propagated also to their students, which are at the end the hobby musicians and this 200 million musicians you were talking about.
So good in some ways that you don't always listen to your investors. Probably good for them that you didn't as well. I'd like to talk about how you got this community of professional musicians to basically love your app. How did you get them to take notice of it, recommend it, even consider it seriously?
Well, in the beginning, as every entrepreneur who starts a SaaS business for the first time, we thought we're going to do performance marketing and this is how it's going to go. We would just a lot of Facebook advertisement. And then you realize, yeah, that's not the right way. Scaling comes after doing a lot of non-scalable things first. This is something I think that one learns during an entrepreneurial journey. We reached out, of course, to musicians. We have relations with many musicians who actually are doing influencer marketing for us without even us having to pay anything because they are excited about it. Of course, the app gets shared, but we've also reached out to the community of music universities. And now we're starting to reach out a lot also to music schools. And there is a big excitement about it. They're very keen to take on the solution and also push it to their students. We're setting up a whole student outreach program in the music universities where there will be webinars so that we really like also onboard the students, because it's a bit like a change from going from horses to cars. I always compare it like this because in a way paper is also something we're all very emotional with, right? Everyone likes the smell of a good book, and we still have affection to paper, like humans had affection to their horses. They were not just a transportation, not device, but meme. And so the same thing is with paper. Musicians are having a special relationship to paper, but once they try the technology and they see what is possible, that with one click you can check the full score of from a part, that with one click you are having access to all of this music that usually you would have to carry, I don't know, 3 suitcases with you. Then they realize, oh wow, I have so many more features at my fingertips than with paper. That makes totally sense. The same thing with the car, right? When they realized that they could go much further, faster, it made sense that the horse became just a passion and not anymore the main transportation tool and for humans. And the same thing is in this case too. So it needs a bit of a showing, convincing in the sense of giving it a try, that there's nothing, there's no harm in it. And this is normal in the beginning. And therefore, you need to have a bit more direct approach. And that works very well through institutions, of course.
And you're also building a community really that is already taking off. You said yourself that you have influencers, musicians who are influencers doing your influencer marketing, basically just because they love it. They're not even being paid, which is always good and always very sustainable. How are you going to keep the momentum going?
It takes time to build such a product, because a product like that cannot be this typical approach of build something in a very minimal version, push it to market, and with time evolve it. Yes, it is like that, but the thresholds are much higher. In the sense, when you build a product that requires the buy-in of a professional community, it naturally needs a way higher minimum viable product level than something that you build for, let's say, ordering a pizza. If it has a bug, you kill the app, you restart it, you order your pizza. But in this case, if it has a bug and it freezes and the person has a concert during that, he will never or she will never use that app again, because they will not have the feeling they can trust it. Therefore, it, of course, naturally took much higher investment to even develop a minimal viable version. And we just finished that recently. And we now just raised the second bigger round, 10 million round, that will help us now to reach out to musicians, to start this entire program that I was talking about, the outreach program, getting in touch with musicians through Facebook and being able to really get them to know about it, reaching out to orchestras, to music schools. So it's a lot of manual work in the sense, reaching out to the community, but they are all the multipliers then for all the hobby musicians they are teaching.
That's just it. When you have the multipliers, when you have them on board, they will be your advocates. That will continue. That will amplify. So you have fans, you have funding. Congratulations, by the way. You have 20 million, a round that was led by publishing giant Dieter von Holtzbrinck Ventures. So that's huge. What is the attraction for them, for your other investors, do you think? I mean, what are they seeing here beyond just the excitement that you're sharing?
Well, you mentioned the 20 million. So the 10 million were actually given by our very first investor, which is the Rudolf Fuchs Kapitalanlagegesellschaft. It's a private investment family office, basically, who believed in all of this when we, the founders, 4 young boys back then, came to Mr. Fuchs with a business plan of 40 pages, which he read, and then after that said, okay, I can imagine to put in the first million and see where you take it, and believed in all of this from the very beginning and funded it until we had a first product to bring to market to actually then attract more investors. And we're super happy to have Dieter von Holtzbrinck Ventures join now. And also we got from the European Union, from the European Innovation Council, we received a 2 million euro grant, which was also together then coupled with an investment, which they participated now with almost 5 million in this round. So it is fantastic that we have also their buy-in, because this shows that also the European Union cares about the digitization of their cultural heritage, which is, of course, something very important, making that accessible. We have lots of users in Indonesia or in other countries remote from here that are writing us, thanks God you guys exist. Otherwise, I would never have access to this material.
That must be so rewarding. You're talking about the interest in different communities, you know, the investor community, the fan community. I'm just curious also, and one of the reasons I caught up with you, Boyan, is I was reading it and thinking, oh, this is really interesting because we think about AI. It's so important now. I started off the show. Yes, it is the buzzword. And you're showing what can be done here. So stretching that model a little bit, you know, it's more than writing, copy editing, marketing. Yes, it makes games. AI is for a number of possibilities and a number of applications. What's the reaction from the AI community to what you're doing? Are they saying, wow, you know, this really shows it's like tech for good?
Well, we really push the boundaries in this technology. It's called optical music recognition. It's a subset technology of optical character recognition, which everyone might know. It's when you put a printed paper on a scanner, and then you end up having a Word document that you actually can edit, although it was originally just a book page, for example. So every character got recognized, and therefore it got digitized into a fully digital document, which you can edit. It's the same kind of technology, just applied to music. And it's extremely complex. It's actually maybe one of the most complex tasks in computer vision nowadays. The difficulty here is that one pixel can be associated with several symbols in music, because it can be that a note head is crossing with a musical with the staff lines, and then there is also maybe a legato starting, and there is a sforzato, and you have vertical but also horizontal points of connection with a note, basically, where in text it's either from left to right or from right to left. You might have an accent, but that's it. And in music, you have so many relations horizontally and vertically going on, and you need to bring them with each other into one information to realize, okay, that's an eighth note with a dot underneath. It's on the third line of the staff, therefore it's and you need to recognize in the very front that that's actually a violin key, and therefore you know that that's actually a D. Then you need to check, are there any maybe sharps in the key, so in which key is it? So there's so many relations you need to realize and recognize and put in relation to actually be able to even say which note it is, that makes it so complex. And we push that technology from systems that were capable of having an accuracy of 70-80% in the recognition, we pushed that to over 99.9% accuracy. And that, of course, got a lot of interest in the community. NVIDIA got us into their Inception program. They helped us a lot. They gave us technology. They gave us their hardware so that we can train on that. And also Amazon helped us a lot with their AWS services. We received lots of credits, which we're very grateful for. So, and you need them to train the model. So this is definitely something that we pushed the boundaries and got attention. We also had some of the world's best AI developers, led by our CTO, but also colleagues of his, working on that. So it has been very rewarding also from a technological perspective, what we have achieved.
Talked about your CTO. Now, he has deep AI expertise, but your advisory board, pretty world class. I'm thinking here about the Microsoft EMEA CEO and others who are advising you. Unpack that a little bit. Tell me a little bit about the team behind the team.
Well, the team is really a special team, because when I start with the management, and then I'll go into the advisory board, but the management already is a kind of uncommon coincidence of life that we met. I don't know, but I mean, a musician who has interest in tech, who had entrepreneurial experience already, is pretty rare. And then that person would meet someone by chance, because they end up being neighbors in the same city, who actually studied IT management and later became a big IT manager, large corporation, and then went into consulting, IT consulting, who he knew somebody who ended up in a Silicon Valley company doing big data and AI development, and who also has a love for music and therefore got interested in the project. And then back then, our co-founder, who was in music management, and somehow we came all together and by coincidence, loved the project together and founded it. That was already pretty rare as a combination, that you, if you think of it, you wouldn't be able to make it up. That's that it's possible.
A lot of connections, interconnections, networks, like neurons in a brain, actually.
In a way, yes. And then this very lucky situation that because I had founded an orchestra and I was in touch with someone who was supporting that, we had at least the possibility to even pitch that to, because you need someone who has a lot of funds to fund something like that. It's AI development is expensive, and the family office of our first investor, it's a big German entrepreneurial family, and that connection also is not something that happens every day. So already that, and then through, of course, other acquaintances, we had the chance to get to Thierry Fromms, the former CEO of Microsoft EMEA, who was extremely valuable in all his advice that he gave us, especially in, you know, he had not only that background, but he had built many companies from RTL radio and television to Lux Cargo. He was overseeing so many projects in his life, so he could give us so much input in everything we did. So yeah, we're pretty lucky in the sense of how constellations worked, that we all came together and could work on this project.
So you are a business, and obviously a business model that you're invested in. Let's talk about that business model, because you're a subscription app, and that today, not as simple as it used to be because people are looking at their spend, but you have passionate users. Tell me a little bit about your user base to date. I think you have around 70,000, 80,000 downloads or users to date.
Not downloads, really, like users. Yeah, 70,000 users. Most of them are still in the free tier because we also launched the paid tier. We launched it early on, but we had a lot of very few works actually yet on it, on the app. So we could see the more works were added, the higher the conversion rates went, and we wanted to launch it early so that we would develop close to the users and not, you know, develop and then release and see whether it worked or not. That was definitely the right approach. And we're seeing now already double-digit conversions from every new user who is coming, converting to paid. Paid features are pretty simple. So the app in itself has a free tier where you have access to the material, but you have ads, pretty common and known model. And there are certain power features like offline usage and printing and other things, which you can only have if you are a paid subscriber. And when people hit those paywalls, then they either decide to skip it and continue with the free version, or they convert. And the conversion numbers right now are already in the double digits, which is really great after one year and few months being on the market. And I would say actually few months already with an attractive product, because before that we were still ramping up the library.
You talk about the conversions. That is a high number. So again, congratulations, you're doing it right. What is working to drive conversions? And the reason I ask that is I'm looking at a lot of research right now on my own, looking at, you know, what does a good and effective paywall look like? For example, personalization plays a huge role as well. What are you seeing? What are you using to take people from free to fee?
That's a very good question. And actually, experimentation is the key there, and data analysis and being data driven. We have a very strong tool that we're using to be able to really like see people's behavior in the app and see where they drop off, try to analyze the screens and see what can be improved. It's really like a statistical game at the end. If you put a screen in between, your conversion rates will drop. If you optimize the position of a button, they might improve. It is sometimes very little adjustment, sometimes also counterintuitive adjustment. You think you'd need to explain more, but you make it more complex and then people drop off more. Sometimes even mistakes. There is a bug and a conversion screen is shown, although it should not be even shown, and it turns out to be a great conversion driver. So it is really interesting how this works and how also people function. I mean, many people download an app. I mean, many, 10% download an app and never open it. You can't do anything about it. They just download the app and they don't open it. These are just also behavioral things of people that you need to consider and take into account. And of course, the better the product, the better the brand is known in the community, the higher the intent of the user who downloaded the app by knowing already what he expects from it, the higher the conversions will be.
And staying on those conversions, and I can imagine, I've seen it, you know, you mentioned the mistake and then you show something at a time and that ends up to be what clinches the deal. Maybe you can share one small tweak you made that had a very important, very massive impact.
Well, I remember that we had a feature that you can use through many devices, across many devices, the app, and have it all synced. And we consider that a cool feature because you can be on the train, work on your future projects, organize them in playlists and put all the scores you need, you know, even maybe make some annotations. And then later when you go home, you open the iPad and you practice really from it. So it's a nice way to be able to actually be productive in your musical projects in ways you couldn't be productive before when having paper. You can't have your library with you on the train and organize all the books you'll need for the next 2-3 months. So we have this feature that syncs everything, and it's a paid feature. And there was a bug that basically this blocker was shown up to every user who would just sign on a new device that was not yet recognized. And this screen was not supposed to show up. Another screen was supposed to show up, just the screen that was saying, hey, why don't you go for premium? It might be interesting. These are the features. But in this case, there was a screen, new device recognized. Do you want to go premium to have all your data from your other device? And most of people clicked yes and they subscribed, although they actually maybe did not understand that they don't have to in that step. And this is, for example, a factor that, okay, this was a bug. It turned out to be that people have a lot of interest in this feature. So we, of course, optimized it. We got rid of the bug, but that was a great indicator for us that sometimes unintentionally you end up doing something that you didn't even think of before.
And what we're hearing in all of this, Boyan, is just the possibilities here for what you're doing for eNote are practically limitless, right? You can see new arrangements, new music, new collaborations. You can even imagine, if you wanted to, like a Spotify-like music discovery service that serves the 200 million or 400 million musicians worldwide. So much that you can choose from. I'm almost envious, but how do you prioritize what you're going to go after and focus your team and resources on just those areas? What are they?
Well, that's actually the most difficult thing to do, I would say. Prioritization, and especially when you have a big vision of a product in mind, it's the hardest thing to filter out the things which are really essential for the business to thrive versus the things that are maybe essential for your personal interests or for the interests of, you know, like, I mean, I'm a bit divided, right? I'm a musician, so I have maybe things that I think are very important for the professional community, but might not be that important for the business itself. So it's very hard to take those decisions. And at the same time, you know that once the vision is completed, it will be a really, really great product. I think this is what every entrepreneur faces, that it's never done. The vision is never done. It's never achieved. It's all the time. You keep adding up. And with every new idea comes 3 new that are added on top of the list. And you get as excited about every new idea as you were about the idea before. So you start thinking, oh no, we should prioritize that because that's so great. So yeah, this is the very, very difficult thing to do, to keep the calm and cold approach, data-driven approach, and realize what is best to be done. Sometimes the most important work is the work that happens under the hood, and it's the least exciting from a user perspective, but refactoring code is important, because then it frees up capacity for new development. Otherwise, you end up blocking entire teams only in keeping the solution alive. So there are a lot of areas that need to be considered. I think for us, the biggest priority right now is to bring all this material that exists into a truly natural digital format. Because once we have that, we have laid the foundation for all further innovation to come. Once everything is in a fully digital format, you can do incredible things with sheet music. You can literally train an AI just as it has been trained on language models, and we see what nowadays what's possible with ChatGPT. It's an incredible tool. Imagine that with just another language, which is music. What can be done there? If a computer really understands everything, it can be such an assistant. It can be a teacher, it can be a mentor, it can be a not mentor, but it can be a supporter in your practicing. It can be a great assistant tools in performing arts organizations. It can be a incredible discovery device for researchers. It's an incredible opportunity once the computer is really an asset that can support you also with labor-intensive tasks that a human cannot do. I mean, it's a proven fact that nowadays it would take a human an entire lifetime to just even copy Mozart's work that he managed, I don't know, to write down in an insanely unhuman effort. So imagine now you have a computer who can analyze all of that all and in seconds. What can be achieved with that, right? How many people can be trained, helped when studying music? So there's a lot of opportunity in all of this, having this industry digitized, but the foundation is having everything digital, and this is what we are now focused on.
I like that you can see ChatGPT and other related topics around AI, which is an overall something that can really polarize people, society. You know, there's a lot of hype, highly exciting, hugely frightening. Where do you sit?
As humans, we are in charge to decide what we do with our creations. You can do from every kind of creation, you can do good and bad. And it's up to us to decide how we use the technology we create. And I think technology can help humans excel in being better versions of themselves. It can help humans have better education. It can broaden access to education. It can democratize knowledge. Technology is an incredibly powerful tool used the right way. And therefore, I'm excited about being, at the front of shaping that future rather than sitting and waiting for it not to change, because that's not something natural. Change is always coming, and better to embrace it and shape it rather than not accept it and fight it.
Like very much your determination to shape it as well. It's not that you're going to be programmed, you're going to program, you're going to shape this, you're going to bring this to a new community, which is what you're doing right now, Boyan. And I wish you every luck in continuing with that.
Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you again for sharing. And I just want to add that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who say, you know what, I'm passionate about music. This matters to me. Where can they find out more, get in touch with you, maybe even join your many, many, I think you have even volunteers, do you not, who are helping you digitize, find this music, find these scores, because they're not all just easily findable in some place. Am I correct?
Of course, we already reached the point where, let's say, the most important works and most known works are already digitized or in the library. So we have had contact with people having rare works of big masters that have never been published, and they are now giving us access to these works. Sure, this is something that we are very, very grateful for. So the possibilities are endless to join the team and join the effort. If you have interest, just contact us. We have a website, eno.com. Also, there are job offerings and positions, open positions. So if there's something interesting for people who would like to join the project, we're excited to welcome them aboard.
And join the mission as well, I think, is what you might say.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing, Voyan, and good luck in the future.
Thank you so much, Peggy.